Hello, iterative marketers. Welcome to the Iterative Marketing Podcast, where each week we give marketers and entrepreneurs actionable ideas, techniques, and examples to improve your marketing results. If you want notes and links to the resources discussed on the show, sign up to get them emailed to you each week at iterativemarketing.net. There you'll also find the Iterative Marketing blog and our community LinkedIn group where you can share ideas and ask questions of your fellow iterative marketers. Now let's dive into the show. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Iterative Marketing Podcast. I'm your host, Steve Robinson, and with me, as always, is the delightfully entertaining Elizabeth Aaron.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you today?
I'm doing great.
We have a date night tomorrow night.
Ooh, what are you doing?
We are going to go see a musical.
I love musicals. Which one are you going to go see?
We're going to go see Once, so I'm excited about it.
Which one is that?
I don't know. I'm a really bad husband and haven't even looked it up. All I know is that my wife is really excited about it, and so I am excited about it too.
I'm going to say you're a good husband because my husband wouldn't even go with me to a musical. So you're, I think you're up on a lot of husbands out there. So
all right. Well, I'll take the credit. What are we talking about today?
Today we are talking about bringing your brand to life. And last week we had said we were going to talk about brand activation, but since that seems to be something that means something different to different people, we kind of are changing the focus. And so instead we're going to call today's podcast Bringing Your Brand to Life.
Either way, I know branding is a hot topic these days, and a lot of organizations are spending a lot of time and effort on making sure that they have their brand buttoned up. But at the same time, a lot of the organizations that we work with will see that brand document then sort of sits in a drawer or sits on someone's desk, and there's not a whole lot of clarity about, okay, what do we do with this? How do we really bring this to life?
Yeah, and it's that's hard because a lot of work goes into that brand definition and that brand discovery, and so for it to sit there and not be used is not a good use of resources, and it hurts your brand overall. So, what exactly do we mean when we say that we're bringing our brand to life?
I think it's really about applying some strategies and tactics to make sure that every single touch point that a prospect or a customer has with your brand is in alignment with that brand, because you want to avoid any incongruence or dissonance in that experience. It's for every one step forward you take in an aligned experience, anytime you create some incongruence or dissonance, it's two steps back. It's much more damaging.
And I think it's important to acknowledge here, you know, we're talking about brand and brand's important. And we are in, I believe this is podcast 12, and we've already talked about brand twice. So if you haven't had a chance yet, definitely go back and listen to last week's episode on brand vectors, as well as episode 2 on defining your brand. But it's important because brand accomplishes two things, or accomplishes one thing, but in two different ways. It either pulls people in or it pushes them away. And that may sound weird because to marketers, you know, we don't want to push anyone away. But I think you have a great example in the way you explain it, and in terms of getting people to love your brand.
When you talk about pulling and pushing people, the goal is really to pull in the like-minded, right fit customers and push away the ones that aren't like-minded. And the other benefit of creating a brand that's a little bit more polarizing, one that's going to really do that push and pull, is that when you pull those customers in, you don't just make them okay or meh about your brand. You make them love your brand because they have it becomes part of their identity as well. And so by creating that polarizing brand, you actually intensify that emotional connection. So if you can think about it, say you've got a group of 10 people standing against a wall, and you have an opportunity as a marketer to attract or repel those people. If you create a polarizing brand, you might pull fewer, say maybe 5 of those people in. But those people are going to really identify with your brand, and they're going to be with you for life. Whereas if you try to create an everyone brand that doesn't take a position and isn't at all polarizing, you might pull 8 of those people in, but they're not going to be nearly as invested or nearly as emotionally attached to your brand.
And, you know, it's more expensive to acquire a new customer than to, you know, keep talking to an old one. And so you want those people that love you, because They are going to stick with you, and they're not even going to think twice when it's time to go buy your product, as long as you are consistently delivering that experience that they need. And that's where this branding and brand management is so important.
I think you hit on a very important point there, that really bringing your brand to life, it goes beyond just marketing to new customers. You have to do that all the way through that entire customer's journey, through when before they know you, all the way through to where they are a customer, and not only are they a customer, but they're out singing your praises and evangelizing your brand, because then that's where it's most powerful, actually.
I think at this point, one thing that's really important to talk about is ensuring that every single touch point supports your documented brand position. And to do that, we really have to look at living your brand from two different perspectives or two different levels. Living your brand is about what you say, and it's also about what you do.
Exactly. And the say part's easy, right? Because that's just really auditing all of your existing collateral, and taking a look at each touch point. What have we written? What is our messaging? What are our designs? And making sure that it says what you mean to say, what aligns with your brand, and then also says it in the same tone that aligns with your brand. So, for example, if your brand was focused on luxury, you wouldn't want to have a bunch of messaging out there that talked about, discount, 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 because that's incongruent with the brand position of being a luxury brand.
You know, you said something. You said, the what you say is the easy part. But I think I might disagree with you on that, because I think for a lot of brands, especially who tuck their brand guide or brand sort of direction away in a drawer, it's not easy. Because if you're not looking at this every day, and you're creating collateral, and you're writing website copy, and you don't have this top of mind, then you start to get away from that brand message that you're trying to support. So I think I'm going to disagree with you on that point, that it's not as easy. I've seen a lot of brands misstep here.
Yeah, I think that I know that when we coordinate any sort of creative, either for ourselves or for a client, we generally make sure that we provide four documents, right? You have your creative requirements. That's the obvious one. But then we also include the customer journey and where this piece of content fits in the customer journey, the persona, and then some sort of a brand document that outlines, that goes beyond just graphic standards, but also outlining, what is that brand personality? What is that brand voice? And how does it feel to be part of that brand?
And then you mentioned it. It goes into how you say it as well. And it's important that the tone and the tenor matches the personality with the brand and aligns with the brand standards. And you, I know, have been doing a lot of work with Marketo lately as we're onboarding a client. And you came across a great example of this.
Yeah, I love the Marketo documentation, because it's written in this quirky, fun style. So, at one point, they're talking about leads and contacts in Salesforce, and it said, now I forget the name of the product, but it said that a Frisbee aspires to be this AirPro ring, and they linked to this product of this like super Frisbee, right? And a lead aspires to be a contact, and then they quoted this and attribute it to ancient proverb, and it's just quirky and fun, and that's a great example of what you say in that documentation is really around how to connect Salesforce to Marketo, but how they're saying it is in a quirky, fun way that aligns with the Marketo brand.
And it's anyone who's tried to work with Salesforce and Marketo knows that that's not always, it's a little bit complicated. It can be complicated. And so by taking that casual and approachable style in their writing, that fun, quirky, they're really reinforcing that, hey, take a deep breath. It's going to be okay. We're all in this together. And it makes you like them more.
Each one of us has an opportunity to go and audit our content and make sure that it does that it establishes an emotional connection, or at least reinforces that personality or that brand position that you work so hard to define, right? Mm-hmm. But we can go even one step further and create content as well that is dedicated. Its only purpose is to communicate that brand.
And when we do that, we need to consider two types of communications. And I think this is where a lot of times I think I've seen companies misstep here. Obviously, we want the external communications. It's very important what our customers are seeing, how we're talking to them, what we're saying to them, and that's important. But we also need to focus on the internal communications. And too often, I think sometimes we forget our internal teams. And this is where we have a huge opportunity. Because our internal teams are the ones, our internal communications are going to the people that are living our brand every single day. And so we want to make sure that they're reflecting what we want them to.
Yeah. When was the last time you looked at your employee handbook? And is that written in your brand voice? And you might think, well, why does that matter? And the answer is because that's the tone and tenor you're setting with your team. And that's just as important as we get into do here after our break. That's just as important as external. And the same thing is true as if you do launch an external branding effort and you have television ads or radio bits, or you have banner advertising or whatever it is that you're trying to get that brand personality and that market position out there. If that is only projected externally, then you're not bringing the team along for the ride. And that makes it hard to maintain congruency. So I think now is a great time for us to take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll talk about how you live your brand from a do standpoint. So we said, we talked about how you say your brand. When we come back, we'll talk about how you make sure that your actions are also in alignment.
Before we continue, I'd like to take a quick moment to ask you iterative marketers a small but meaningful favor and ask that you give a few dollars to a charity that's important to one of our own. This week's charitable cause was sent in by Catherine Braunschweiger of Mueller Communications in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Catherine asks that you make a contribution to the Sojourner Family Peace Center, providing an array of support aimed at helping families affected by domestic violence. Learn more at familypeacecenter.org or visit the link in the show notes. If you would like to submit your cause for consideration for our next podcast, please visit iterativemarketing.net/podcast and click the Share a Cause button. We love sharing causes that are important to you.
And we're back. So before the break, we were talking about how do you say your brand or make sure that your content, your collateral all align and support the brand. Now we're talking about how do you live that brand. Elizabeth, what do you think is the most important component when we talk about living your brand?
Your team, you know, making sure that your team understands and your team is able to be guided by your brand is so important because, again, they're the ones that are coming in contact with your customers every single day. And if you're, you know, you've got collateral out there in market that is reinforcing your brand and has a clear brand message, and then your customers come in and interact with your employees, whether it's on the phone or in person, and they're getting a different experience. It doesn't matter what you're saying in market. People are going to remember what they have personally experienced, what they have felt. And so making sure your team members are on board is vital.
Yeah. And a lot of marketers, a lot of business owners will jump right to, well, okay, let me script this. Let me script the actions that people need to take and let's create processes and procedures that are all in line with our brand. But you have to go one step further. And I think the greatest example of this is there's a story, and if you Google, I think, a Disney and Lost Giraffe story or something, you'll get this to come up. But we'll link to it in the show notes. But there was an instance where a child had lost a stuffed giraffe at Disney, I believe Disney World, and one of the employees found it. And this was completely unscripted. This was not their process or procedure. But the employee went and took that little giraffe on its own adventure within Disney and took pictures of it along the way. And then when they figured out whose stuffed giraffe this was, they put it in the room along with a little photo book of everywhere that giraffe had been throughout the day. Now, you can expect that the parents of that child and that child are probably Disney fans for forever. Because of this amazing over-the-top experience that by no means could you have a process or procedure for this. This was just how the employees understood to live the Disney brand.
I love this story. And for those of you watching us on video, you get to see me tear up a little bit because every time Steve tells me this or I hear this, for some reason, the mom and me just, I'm like, oh, they took care of him. So, you know, I think that's a great example of where they've really ingrained in their employees that this is what we stand for and this is what we deliver to our customers. And they have empowered them to make that decision on their own.
So while there is an angle of this that involves auditing your processes and your procedures and making sure that they aren't incongruent with your brand, and maybe adding a few here and there where it's easy, I think more importantly than that, it's communicating those values and communicating the brand itself and what you stand for and the promises you make to the public inside the organization on a regular basis in order to get that across. How have you seen that best done, Elizabeth?
Once you've taken a look at your process and procedures and made sure that those are in alignment, taking a look, as you mentioned earlier, the employee handbook and making sure that from that first touch point, even taking it a step back, even that first job description that attracts that employee in, you know, those are great ways to really make sure that people understand what it is that you stand for and attract the right people. And then from there, it's communicating it out to them. It's reinforcing this in communications like your signage, your brand cards. You know, you want to recognize the employees that are living the brand and get other employees involved in that recognition. And then, as I mentioned earlier, the job description, hiring to your values. I know that one of the things when I was out looking that attracted me to Brilliant Metrics was the job description. The first line just hooked me right away. And I thought, that is the company I want to work for. And so job postings are important. Your onboarding process, making sure that every step, just like you would with your customers, every step of interaction with your employees, your brand is being reinforced. And when you do that, you are showing them, this is important to me. This is what we value. We want you to value it too. And you're living your brand and they're going to live your brand in return.
A lot of what we've talked about today has been reinforcing an existing brand. It's been making sure that stuff is in alignment. And a lot of that sounds an awful lot like brand management. How does this go beyond brand management?
That's a great question. And to some extent, what we're talking about is aligned with brand management. We're planning, we're auditing, we're aligning our current customer journey with our brand to make sure that it's consistent along every single touch point. But where we start to see a difference in brand management and truly bringing our brand to life is when we start to create new touch points to communicate that brand, whether it be through media, whether it's through experiences, or it's through our content.
Yeah, I think that you brought up a really great example of this. Was it Lay's?
Oh gosh, I love potato chips. Yes, the Lay's Do Us a Flavor. They had a problem. They were falling behind in the market, and so they needed to come up with a way to get market share back up and get people talking about them and engaged with their brand. And so they developed this Do Us a Flavor, and I'm sure you've all heard of it. You've seen some of these flavors on the shelves and thought, oh my gosh, that sounds disgusting. Or how have I lived my life without them? And it makes you want to try it, even the gross ones. You just kind of want to know what it's like. And so they put this together, this program, that with a goal of building sales and increasing the emotional connection with the 18 to 34 demographic. And it worked. It led to brand awareness. Their product ratings went up. The number of purchases went up. Purchase intent went up. Sales went up. I know I have personally gone and bought multiple bags because I wanted to test them. I haven't actually gone and voted, but I've bought the bags and some are great and some not so much.
And I think beyond that, it also helps shift the perception or maybe better align the perception of Lay's as more of the fun out there, experimental type of brand and not your stagnant ripple potato chip. So, I think it's really important that you do those sorts of activities under certain circumstances. I mean, at all times, you should have some sort of media or experiences or something out there to communicate that brand, some dedicated brand programming. But there are certain instances where it's particularly important, where that investment needs to be higher. The first one that comes to mind is if you're a new brand or if you're rebranding an existing brand.
Yeah, definitely. And it's not just a new brand. You may have an established brand already. I had a client a few years back who had a very established brand and had realized that there was a submarket they hadn't realized that they could sell to, but it was very different than their target demographic. The product they were selling was, while in the same type of product, was had a very different use. And so we went through an entire brand development for this sub-brand of their core offering. And so that's another a great opportunity to really put this into place.
And I think another example of where you need to put a little bit more oomph behind your brand marketing is when you realize that there's a problem. And this usually comes from a discovery process. And we talked about the brand vector process last week, and I think that's a great example of a discovery process you can use to help identify these issues. But sometimes you find out that how you picture yourself is not how the rest of the world pictures you. So I'm sure we've all had those awakening moments personally, but the same thing can happen with your brand. And when that happens, you have to make a choice because that incongruence will only cause you to create touch points that aren't in alignment with your brand.
And there's two ways that can go. If what you're promising in your written communication doesn't align with what everyone thinks about you, you can either change how you talk about yourself, or you can change how you interact with the customer. And that's a decision that you'll have to make internally and decide what is the right choice for your company.
Are you going to try to redefine who you are internally, or are you going to try and drag the public over to the perception that you think they should have, right?
Mm-hmm. And like we talked about last week, the second is it's hard to do. It's not impossible, but it is hard to do.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think the last example of where you need to make a more solid investment in brand programming is when you realize that you need to make a conscious shift in your brand. So this maybe isn't a traditional rebrand, right? But you need to pivot one component of your brand personality or your market position in order to remain competitive in the market. Maybe you're too close to another competitor and you become easily confused, or maybe you recognize a new opportunity to compete in the market. So you want to emphasize some component of your brand personality or your market position that maybe was played down or never really saw the light of day in the past.
Mm-hmm. I think this is something is starting to come up in the insurance industry a bit. As you know, you've got this new group of millennials coming up and starting to buy insurance, and how we've always done business or how they've always done business isn't necessarily working anymore. And so they've got to go in and quite a few insurance agencies are working on that rebrand and trying to figure out how can I continue to survive in a way that's authentic to me, but also resonates with my market.
I think in all cases, though, you want to make sure that you're doing this consistently. So it doesn't do any good to be projecting something out through paid channels only to have your team not fulfilling that brand on the other side, right? So really, it's a matter of making sure that you're looking at every single touch point and making sure that, to the best of your ability, all of that is in alignment from the inside, from the outside, and the messaging that you're creating and the experiences you're creating, that everything supports that unified brand, and then you're really set up for success.
All right. And I think that is a great point to wrap this up. Today, we went over bringing your brand to life. Next week, we are going to talk about persona research and where you can start to really dive in and start putting together those personas.
I want to thank everyone for making time for us this week. Until next week, onward and upward.
If you haven't already, be sure to subscribe to the podcast on YouTube or your favorite podcast directory. If you want notes and links to resources discussed on the show, sign up to get them emailed to you each week at iterativemarketing.net. There, you'll also find the Iterative Marketing blog and our community LinkedIn group where you can share ideas and ask questions of your fellow iterative marketers. You can also follow us on Twitter. Our username is at @ITER8IVE, or email us at podcast@iterativemarketing.net. The Iterative Marketing Podcast is a production of Brilliant Metrics, a consultancy helping brands and agencies rid the world of marketing waste. Our producer is Heather Ullman, with transcription assistance from Emily Bechtel. Our music is by Seastock Audio Music Production and Sound Design. You can check them out at seastockaudio.com. We'll see you next week. Until then, onward and upward.